You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Fantastic Voyage. This is the captain of this vessel, First Mate Chris Johnson, and we are so honored. Chris.
He's in the building.
I got two of the most handsome lights.
Come on, Dad.
He came back around with it.
Why you got to come with it twice, man?
Light-skinned, curly-head brothers, maybe in the history of the game. I don't know. Got to check with Jordan Farmore about that. But I think I got
toughest,
I got two out of the top.
Toughest, for sure.
No question. But y'all, you said it. And you know, I want to get into that a little bit later, but I think that might have something to do with the toughness, because man, I'm sure you were tested and challenged every inner city gym you go into.
Yes.
I'm sure there was
Matt Barnes some in the building. Down.
But let me talk about what you're doing now. All the Smoke, one of my favorite. Is that a podcast? What are you guys?
It's
probably
a show. Yeah,
we transcended the podcast.
We added some versatility to it, and then you know, on top of that, we've been able to turn that into All the Smoke Productions, which we have five shows under our belt right now. Big partnership with DraftKings, and we're creating it as we speak right now.
Whose idea was it to pair you and Steven Jackson?
Me, but I just didn't know to pair us with what. You know what I mean? I know we were good friends. So Jack got traded to our We Believe team in 2006.
Golden State.
Yes, he had some trouble in Indiana. That team was a team of misfits that we had in Oakland, and he fit right in and instantly became brothers. You know, we made a little NBA history that first year, beating Dallas, first 8 seed to beat a 1 seed in the 7-game series. That following year, my mom died from cancer within 26 days, diagnosed November 1st, died November 27th. So in 26 days, lost my best friend, but Jack was the guy that was always there for me, checking on me, coming to hang out, watch movies, bring me weed, bring some food.
Yep.
Kick it right, you know, my show. So we went from teammates to brothers right there. And you know, he retired a few years before me, but when I got out, you know, I kind of steered toward, you know, didn't know I wanted to do it, but you know, he tried media. We were both fairly successful, and I was just like, you know, this is great opportunity for working with ESPN, and he was working with Fox. I was just like, you know, let's do something that's more kind of our lane. And I told him, let's do a podcast. Neither of us really knew what it was, but I knew there was a little bit more leniency. And, man, I pitched, got a random luck, ran into someone over at Showtime that was starting Showtime Basketball. Cold pitched it to him at the Shutters Hotel in my Santa Monica, and the rest is history.
Yeah, man, that's a great great story. You know, I ran into Jack on the lot of Fox on Pico. So Josiah and I were pitching some shows or something to some executives. I just kind of randomly ran into him. And I had seen him do some studio stuff, some minimal stuff at that time. And I told him, man, you got a big time future in this business. Just something about the way. And same thing with you. I think I may have told you the same thing. Just there was an honesty. There was an insight. There was a perspective, you know, that was fresh and that was needed in broadcasting. And both you guys together, man, you guys are killing it.
I think it was kind of just the unapologetic realness. Yeah. I think the same way we played the game is kind of the way we've, you know, attacked media. And it's real, raw, not perfect, but it's authentic. And you know, make mistakes and you know, not too big to apologize for the mistakes. So I just feel like overall, and I mean, obviously not only us, but I just think the wave of athletes coming into the media space and allowing to not only, one, tell our own stories, but provide platforms for others to do the same. People have always told our stories, and some of them have done a great job, and some of them haven't. You know,
most of them haven't.
Yes.
Most of them have not.
Agreed. Keep it real. Yeah. But now there's now there's an opportunity for us to have our own platforms and allow our brothers and sisters to tell their stories, you know, pretty much out of the horse's mouth.
Yeah, I got a Jack story. I mean, my first interaction with Jack, Matt, I don't know if you even know this, was 1999 when the lockout had ended. Okay. We went to training camp at the same spot, Minnesota. So I was in training camp with Jack in Minnesota, Anthony Peeler, KG, Marbury, Sam Mitchell, making us go ahead in the suicide lines. You know how you got, you know, everybody's running and you got sprints. And so Sam Mitchell made all the rookies go up. But no, me and Jack, we kicked it. We parlayed. We chilled. And that's kind of how I got to know him. But the thing about Jack back then, man, he was like 6'8", running like a two guard, a 1, 2, 3 as a 17-18 year old.
Yeah.
So it was just like, he was Kobe's class. It was just like mind-boggling to see that dude with that type of talent from Port Arthur. That's when I first got kind of put up on
PA.
The whole Port Arthur
shout
movement.
Out PA, yeah.
Bun
B, Pimp, yeah.
For he sure. Had some good, yeah, he had some 20 points. Some 20 points.
No, Jack can score. Jack can score. And he played defense.
Yeah.
Jack was solid, I think, you know, obviously, and he feels this way. You know, he felt like the brawl in Auburn Hills and in Detroit,
yeah.
you know, kind of held him out of a few all-star opportunities or kind of just at least recognition that he deserved.
Facts.
So let's talk about you real quick. And for me, again, I may have told you this, may not, but the first time you came on my radar, somebody that was going to be a really good pro, was when I was working with Fox Sports. We were doing USC, UCLA. For some reason, the game was at the Forum. I don't know what was happening.
Yeah.
And man, you lit it up, had like 33, 34, knocked down a bunch. I said, didn't know you could shoot like that. You hit a bunch of threes.
Yeah.
And it's interesting what confidence can do, because you went on a nice little roll.
I did.
I think from that point on.
Yeah, I mean, that was a fun time. Oddly enough, the backstory, I got a chance, Magic Johnson's favorite player growing up. You know, got a chance to meet him when I came to UCLA, but one of the reporters said I sat in his locker that night, which was, you know, even more special.
Yeah.
But with, able to, you know, kind of show a little bit of versatility. And then that following game is when we, you know, we were back at Poly during that weekend and we beat Kansas when they were number one in the country. And I think I had 30 something in that game. But, you know, at UCLA was, you know, very, at that time, they were getting the kids they were supposed to get. They're getting all the California kids and McDonald's, all the Americans. And Chris, your guys' class was really good. The class before, you were a freshman when they won a championship?
Yep.
You know, they won a national championship. Baron Davis and Earl Watson's class comes in before my ours. They're number one.
Yes, sir.
Then I come in with Jerron Rush and Ray Young and Gadzirik and Moiso, and we're number one. And they're all McDonald's All-American. So it kind of just took me a little bit to, you know, find my footing. But, you know, I'm glad because it built a lot of character. You know, these days, if the kids would have faced the adversity I had my freshman or sophomore year at UCLA, they would have ran somewhere else. But I think it built character and understand I had to, you know, I had to get better to get out there on the court and play. And that's what I did. And I was able to, you know, make a career out of it.
Football, outstanding.
Yeah, wide man, receiver.
Yeah. Okay. Any
great minds.
Any regrets for not going that
direction? Not regrets, just, you know, just some what ifs at times. I just, you know, I was a better football player than basketball. I was recorded in both, All-American in both, but just felt like there was longevity being 6'8", playing basketball. And I didn't see anyone outside of, you know, someone back in your, Harold Carmichael with the Eagles was 6'7" at the time. But, you know, outside of that, Tony Gonzalez was 6'4". There wasn't really that crossover yet of basketball players, you know, playing football like there is now, and with Antonio Gates and Jimmy Grahams and all those guys. So, you know, just stuck with what I felt like I would have a longer career in, and you know, did pretty good for it.
So you would have a great perspective, just in terms of that whole,
Austin Rivers and
James Jones. So they had the big thing going on about, you know, basketball players playing football.
Yeah.
Are they guys tough enough? Matt, you played both. You led the nation. You led the nation in touchdowns. Let's keep it real.
Yeah.
You're high level in both. Is basketball easier transition for football, or is football easier transition for who?
Other way around.
Okay.
First of all, it's not easy at all.
Okay.
And I feel like you have to have a certain kind of mindset and burnt outness and toughness to even play football. But I mean,
burnt outness. What do you
burnt? Just not giving a shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Just be willing to, you know, run into a wall.
Okay.
You know, that's what those guys are doing, and I respected that. You know what I mean? So I definitely think I love that he asked.
He doesn't understand. Yes, see, I was burnt out in high school. They would have referred to me as KJ's burnt out.
I'm still burnt out.
And Matt's burnt out.
Yeah, still.
Like, it's a mindset. It's a mindset, MJ.
Yeah, you got to go.
Is the curly head light thing?
Hey. Yeah, that definitely has something to do with mine.
Yeah. But always having to prove yourself, always having to,
or just be ready. Just be ready. You got to be tough. You know what I mean. So, again, back to the point. I just think it's easier to cross over
from
basketball to football. Okay. You've never seen anyone successfully. Charlie Ward did it.
That's one. Right.
Charlie Ward. But outside of that, you've seen more guys that played basketball, didn't really go their way, and make a jump in football and be Hall of Famers and be impactful. So I think in which the way it was presented, it was arrogantly and 30 guys. No, there's not 30 guys. There's maybe a handful of guys, five guys maybe. You look at the Ant Edwards, the Russell Westbrooks and all this. And depending on position and really depending on how tough you are, you got to be tough to play football.
For sure.
I don't necessarily think you have to be mentally tough to play basketball, but I don't think you have to be tough, as tough to play basketball. And that's no knock at basketball, but I think to answer that question, it's a much easier transition to go from basketball to football than football to basketball.
So while we're talking basketball, let's get back to some Bucks-centric stuff. Yeah. And you played for the current Bucks coach, Doc Rivers.
That's our guy.
When that was the Donald Sterling moment.
Yes.
Refresh my recollection.
Yes, not to cut you off, Marcus, but Clipped comes out June 4th on FX. It was about that season and about that team. I got Ed O'Neill, Al Bundy playing Donald Sterling, and got Lawrence Fishburne playing Doc. Why am I forgetting his name now? Got Sharunas.
My guy Sharunas. And I did
Jackson.
Not know that, Matt.
Yeah, he is.
I just know that Sharunas is an actor.
Yes.
That would be you, a good you.
So now I think they cast it really well. I'm interested to see how it play. I kind of consulted on the project. But back to Doc. I think Doc, that was an interesting time, man. You got to think. So that Lob City team was. Barron and Blake started it.
Yep.
Okay. Barron was gone. CP came in, and the keys were kind of handed to CP, although Blake, you know, was the up-and-coming star. So I think right from the rip, there was a little bit of animosity there.
Yeah.
And then the ad pieces, Lamar Odom, myself, J.J. Redick, Jamal Crawford. Man, we had Eric Bledsoe at times. Darren Collison. Mm-hmm. So very solid team. Win 56 games with my first year with did Vinny Del Negro. They fire him after winning 56 games.
Okay.
Crazy. But you guys had something like that over there in Milwaukee that we might touch on a little bit later, who got fired with a solid record. And then they traded for Doc Rivers. Like, how often do you hear about them trading a coach? So Doc was supposed to be the savior. You know what I mean? He did a great job of kind of wrangling the amazing talent he had in Boston and kind of was that, you know, that final push to get them a championship. And then you know, he moved on. So he came, and it was just interesting. I think, you know, I think Doc is a great motivator. I think Doc is great at understanding the game and obviously knowing the game. But I just think there was some weaknesses in some of the stuff he did. And one thing I think most, and I want to be careful because I like Doc, although we got into our I like Doc.
For sure.
I think he's a good person.
Yeah.
I just think there was a lot of players headbutting each other, you know, kind of running into each other, that I thought that Doc would be able to kind of make his way through and make him see eye to eye, and that didn't happen. And I can't blame all Doc for that, you know. But just in game adjustments, and you know, guys had issues with substitution patterns. And then again, you know, guys are continuing to get better, and there's a little bit of jealousy in the locker room between some guys. So I say all that to say, I think we had a very, very, very talented team during Doc's runs that, you know, won the first Pacific Division championship for the Clippers. And, you know, we're a top two seed in the West and had a 3-1 lead to go to the Western Conference Finals and blew it and had some other leads. So we had a lot of talent we just weren't able to materialize, and I feel like that was really a wasted opportunity with the caliber of talent we had on that team.
Was playing for an owner like Donald Sterling, was it as bad as it's been advertised, or how was your experience,
Chris? It was never about playing for him. You know what I mean? It was about playing for who was in the locker room, who the coach was, and representing our families. I personally never had a bad experience with Mr. Sterling at all. That's not to say other guys didn't, and everyone has their experiences, but I didn't have, you know, any bad experiences with him, and actually liked Shelly. You know what I mean? I thought Shelly Sterling was, you know, a tough lady dealing with all the BS she had to deal with, and she was always really nice to me. So, you know, I showed her respect in that face. So never really had an issue, you know, until, you know, the mistress leaked the tapes.
Yeah. And well, let me tell you about my experience with Donald Sterling. Got traded, what was it, 84-85 season, like that September.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, was looking forward to coming out.
What year in the league was that for you?
That was
eighth or ninth,
okay. around my eighth mm-hmm. year, I believe.
Okay.
And coming from Milwaukee, where and Don Nelson told me before, you know, Nelly told mm-hmm. me before they traded, he's like, look, Ian, we're not sending you to the Lakers. we're sending you to the Clippers, and they got a crazy way of doing stuff out there. So just mind your P's and Q's. And so, but the point is with Donald, I mean, so I come out, he's got five or six lawsuits against Norm Nixon and Michael Caine, over $500 moving expenses. Just really, and Don Cheney, over a $400 moving expense. Just real nickel and dime
petty
stuff. Petty stuff. Mm-hmm. We have our training camp out at Cal Poly Pomona. I think the Lakers are in Hawaii that year, Santa Barbara. Somewhere.
Right. Pomona.
We're staying at the
Best Western.
Well, it was, I wish it was that good.
Motel 6?
Motel 6 or Econo Lodge or something like that, where you got the paper thin. It was just a real low. We practiced at the Wine Garden YMCA on
in the hood.
Vermont and Century.
In the hood.
You know, we had a white kid from Boston University, Jay Murphy.
Jay Murphy.
He was like, is this neighborhood safe? I was like, Jay, you might want to keep your eyes peeled and your windows up.
Head on a swivel.
But it was just a... The environment.
Cheap.
He didn't want to
spend money.
But it was more than that. He would bring in a lot of his friends to come in and oogle and look at us after
weird.
Games. You know,
cattle.
Butt naked and just, you know, bring a bunch of just, you know, five or six of his
cattle.
Business
cattle.
Buddies.
And, yeah, you'll see that on this show.
It was a weird first Christmas party at his Malibu house. He had a Santa Claus there, Matt. And so he was making all the players sit on Santa's lap. So our media guy comes up to me. He's like, Marcus, can you sit on Santa's lap?
Making.
I'm 30.
Grown-ass man.
No way.
So Marcus, if you don't do it, I'm going to lose my job. Please.
Wow.
For me. I was like, oh, man. So I sat on Santa's lap, but I think I took his hat off and palmed his head.
Yeah. Had to make it as manly as possible.
It was a weird experience. It was Elgin Baylor there when you were there?
Yes.
Okay. Did you have a...
No, I didn't have a relationship with him either. I mean, obviously respected him and what he did, but I mean, similar to your story, I went there my first 10 day was with them, and we're practicing at South by Southwest out that way. We had to leave the back doors to the gym open because people would break into cars. Right. There was no real locker room. We shared the locker room with students. There was no showers. Jeez. I mean, the first time around, I'll say it, you know, it was very cheap and a poorly ran organization, and I didn't have any other experience. I just knew it was better at UCLA than it was in the pros, which I think is crazy. So second time around, before he ended up getting insane and putting his foot in his mouth, he decided to start paying and got us to practice like a real practice facility. So he kind of started changing his ways and trying to build a winner instead of trying to make money off it.
That was the Playa Vista facility.
Yeah.
They built that, which is I haven't been in there, but it's
nice. Very nice.
From everything I hear.
Now it's out. Now they got the new one, but Yeah.
And that goes into, and Chris and I had a bit of a discussion with this last week, I believe, but it's almost like you're kind of in that bridge between guys of my generation in the 80s and 90s. And what was your first year in the league? Early?
02.
02.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But there seems to be this rift between old school guys who complain about the plethora of three-pointer shot and the way the game is played.
Yeah.
And then the J.J. Reddicks and the plumbers and how there was no competition. And forget the fact that Wilt Chamberlain played against 16 Hall of Fame centers during the course of his career. I mean, where do I land? Not where do you land, but why is that chasm existing like
tough.
That?
Tough. I mean, first of all, everyone has an opinion now, you know, social media, so everyone has a voice. But I can, you know, when I first came in, it was inside out. You know what I mean? There definitely wasn't the volume shooting threes. The ball had to touch the paint. So everyone had a solid center or a solid power forward where it had to go inside out. And, you know, I mean, what did Reggie Miller average? 3 threes a game, 4 threes a game. You know what I mean? I'm catching the end of that era. You know what I mean? And Ray Allen was a prolific shooter, but he was shooting maybe, what, 4, 5 a game?
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously Steph Curry's wave and movement changed that. You know, him, Clay, and kind of everyone kind of bought in because it's a copycat league. Just as far as understanding or respecting who came before us, it's tough. You mean, because, you know, we, unless you were there and lived it and played it, such as yourself, you know, we didn't get to see a lot. So we'll see edits, or we'll see, unless we really go back and do our homework. So it's just kind of hard for, you know, guys, and it's easier to, you know, we're a generation now, or we're a world now that looks at edits instead of looking at any full thing. You know what I mean? So people just, you know, get pinned into based on that, and you'll get some crazy takes from here now about, you know, the greatness of people before and after.
How much does, like, ego come into that map. When you look at it and you're like, yo, I'm playing now in 2020, you know, whatever, in the current era. Mm-hmm. You guys played back then. You know, the game was different. Emphasis was different. Training, et cetera. How much from an NBA perspective is ego factor into all this?
Well, I mean, you look at some stuff and you look and you see, and again, I'm not disrespecting you. You saw Bob Cousy, heavy right hand. Like, he couldn't even put that thing in it. Like, he didn't have a left hand.
Jerry West.
You know,
heavy, so heavy right.
So then
right?
You look at the strength and the way the game's changed from the athleticism point, and then how technology's changed with the ability to keep us fresher and better shoes. And it's, you know, it's just hard. I mean, every, you know, when you look back, there's disadvantages that you guys played with, you know what I mean? That we had, you know, the benefit, we had the benefits of that. And then obviously this next generation has the benefits of everything. So it's just kind of hard to compare eras, compare times. But, you know, all I know is Marcus, you know, there's less than 5,000 people that have ever been able to say I played in the NBA, wow. and less than that played, you know, more than 10 years. Right. You know what I mean? So for anyone to make it and play is a tremendous honor. Thanks. And, you know, I enjoyed my time, and I respect everyone who's been a part of this fraternity.
Well, and that's always my point, Matt, is that if you were able to dominate your era, dominate the competition of that era with the technology and the shoes and all the disadvantages that you might, and even though we didn't, you know, playing in Converse, Chuck Taylor Converse All-Stars, like an eighth of an inch thick.
Crazy.
You know, well, it was cool.
Scared to death.
But we didn't feel that way.
We
were, you know, that was like, it. Then Adidas comes along, and that's like, man, this has got like a quarter inch.
Now we're doing it.
Yeah, now we're doing it. I can really get up and down. But my thing is, if you dominated your era of the talent that's available to you in your era, if you take those same players, Wilt Chamberlain, whomever it happens to be, out of those eras, and you give them the same technological advantages the guys have today, they'd be fine today. Mm-hmm. The Rick Perrys, the great shooters, would expand their range. Mm-hmm. I mean, Larry Bird, J.J. Redick was talking about how he was not a great three-point shooter, looking at percentages only his first couple of years. But
wasn't the game.
That wasn't the game. Yep. It was a mid-range game. So that's you know, it bothers me, Matt, just from the standpoint of other sports don't seem to be, there's not as much vitriol between the old school guys and the young school guys, the way basketball seems to be headed right now.
Because we have the most talking heads. Yeah. You know what I mean? We just have so many talking heads now that it, unless you're a student of the game, and JJ's my guy. Sometimes he says some wild stuff. So a lot of time he's on point. Leading candidate for the Laker job, by the way.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes you do your homework, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you go straight off numbers. Sometimes you go off the edits. We don't know. I'm not speaking for JJ. I'm just talking about in general when you're looking back and trying to respect what's come before you.
Right.
Matt, when you mentioned it, JJ's top candidate for the job now, what makes him a viable candidate without coaching, without pro coaching experience?
What makes him better than Jamal Crawford?
And what makes the NBA such a unique fraternity where you guys actually hire guys without experience to run an organization?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You know, JJ is a good friend of mine. One guy I thought coming into the league I would never mess with and got on a team with them, and is probably one of my closest NBA friends to this day. But to answer your question, who knows? I you know, you're taking a chance. He's never had, I know he coaches his sons, and his son's little. You know what I mean? But he's never really had no coaching experience. But JJ was telling me he had opportunities to coach last year, and he turned them down because he just wasn't kind of really set on what was next. He was just out. Family was a priority. He did a little bit of media. I think JJ is a very smart player. High IQ, intelligent. You can tell by the way he speaks, and he's able to break down stuff. Now, when he's slandering the old school guys, some people might not see it that way, but I mean, when he's not slandering old school guys, JJ really knows what he's talking about. Yeah. So, you know, it's a gamble, though. You don't really know. You know, the biggest thing, and you know, Marcus, you know, and even Chris, you know him from pro experience overseas, the coach has to have the respect of that locker room first and foremost. But I think, obviously, if this is, I'm not even saying it's Bron's guy, but they're doing a show together. You know what I mean? So if Bron's, you know when the star stamps someone, everyone else does, but still you have to have a way to be able to communicate with these guys. And I think JJ has still not far enough to remove to forget how it is to be these younger players in this newer generation, even starting younger, but particularly in the NBA, it's way different. All that yelling and screaming, and it used to be my way, doesn't work with this generation of kids. So to be able to relate to these kids, and then obviously he knows his X and O's.
Well, is that what it boils down to? I mean, is that why Darvin Ham, I mean, at some point you lose the locker room, you lose the respect, or Adrian Griffin in Milwaukee?
Yeah, man.
What is it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm wondering.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm wondering. But you look at both those guys, and they're kind of right on the cusp. Those guys were going out when I was coming in.
Yeah.
Both those guys you mentioned. You know what I mean? I love D. Ham. Yeah. I don't know how he is as a coach. He was an assistant with the Lakers back when I played with Kobe, but I don't. But I think the key to coaching across the board now is less X and O's and more relatability and having these guys trust in what you're saying. And again, to me, it's always, and I learned this coming out of, and it, although it was little kids, coming out of the league and starting coaching my kids, you have to go down to their level and gain their trust and their respect, no matter what age they are, and then bring them to where you want them to go. You can't yell at them and expect them to go where you want them to go. Mm. And that's how we were raised, and that's how we played. Yeah. It was the coach's word or the highway. It's not that way no more. That's why, and players are making so much money now. So the coaches are the first ones to go now, whether they deserve it or not. They're easy because their salary's a lot less than the you know, the stars.
So you mean to tell me when Chris was 13, 14, we were playing one-on-one at the house in Bel Air, and he kept telling me I was cheating. I told him if he tells me that one more time, he's going to get it.
Yeah.
He said it one more time, and I picked up a weight. Remember, I picked up that weight boot, and I threw it like about 30 feet the opposite direction.
No.
But just to let it at you? At you. Landed right next to you.
On the ankle. Yeah. Near the ankle.
Near the ankle.
I had to, like, move it.
But it's a, but you, and you've got two sons.
Different.
You got two. I mean, different. You got more than two, but you got two that are high school freshmen, just finished up, Carter and Isaiah.
Yes.
Hooping. And so what talk about that.
Just a little bit of both.
The challenges.
A little bit of both. Okay. I mean, you have to. And obviously, Marcus, and you know, like, similar to me, like, I came from nothing. But I worked my ass off so that my kids didn't have to do that. Yeah. So my kids live behind gates and go to private schools. You know what I mean? But how do you have that balance of toughness and dog and all the stuff I learned playing tackle football in the streets and fighting my way up through racism and all this? How do you instill that in the toughness side of them and the mentality side? So it's really a balance of, you know, making them understand and appreciate, you know, what life is about and how blessed they are. But I think their opportunity of being around it a lot. What I'm thankful for is the twins were, you know, my last 4 years, they were on the planes with us in the locker rooms with Kobe and Chris Paul and Steph and KD and all these guys. So soaking up the game and really kind of understanding and seeing it at an early age. And you can't substitute that for nothing.
But Matt, do you share your struggles? I mean, you had a house burned down, right?
No, a high school. My high school was almost burned down by the KKK. No, I told him about it. You know, it was actually just on the Barnes Bunch. You can catch us on WeTV every Friday night, 7 p.m. Pacific.
The Barnes Bunch.
Barnes Bunch, yeah. WeTV, all black streaming if you missed it. But no, I talked about that on the show. You know what I mean? Again, and I'm blessed. You know, I'm Italian and black. And then the twins are Italian, black, and Mexican. Their mom's Mexican and black. So it's just like, luckily, you never really knew what the twins were. And biracial is a lot more normal than it was when I was coming up in the 80s. So it's not that big of a deal. But at the same time, I think all those hardships and ups and downs and disappointments and cries and fights help build the man and the character that I have today.
How important is it when you're raising your kids today and they're athletes and they're good and you know they got a future? And I know you've done this because you've had this foundation for them where they have had their own branding and business entities. How important is it to you, you know, expose them to that side as well as the athletic side of things as you're raising them? Do you do that?
Yeah, I just think the business of basketball, and I think that's an old cliche, and it was something I didn't learn until the NBA on the backside of my career, you know, so why not expose them to that now, you know, with the podcast and some opportunities they have? But, you know, you always want to keep the first thing first, and basketball's not the first thing now. You know, obviously being a good person is first, and then school is next, and then being an athlete, and then girlfriends and everything else, extracurricular time come behind that. So, you know, my goal is to raise good, productive young men, regardless if they're blessed to be athletes or not. And then obviously, you know, being able to take care of their school, that's the one thing I'll say about their mom is she doesn't play about academics, and then basketball comes after that. So, you know, my boys have found the love, and Marcus, we were talking about your daughter before we got on air about her age and does she love it yet, or kind of finding the love. And it took the twins until they were, even though they were around a lot, it probably took them until they're maybe 13, they're 15 now,
really,
to fall in love with they want to play video games,
but
bro.
Man, being around them in all the camps and their whole life.
High IQ.
Oh yeah.
Cause they were around, they could shoot. And they're high IQ and they're tough.
That's how I
even
was
though
too.
We had a little bit of, even though they had a little bit of money, they were still tough. Because I just don't do the soft. Excuse my language. So, but as far as the skill set, like they wanted to play video, and I wasn't going to force them. Chris, I think we talked about this on your show last time. Like, I can't love it more than you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Did. So I think that the workout with Kobe for their 10th birthday kind of sparked that fire.
Yeah.
And it still probably took them maybe 2.5, maybe 3 years before they'd be like, Dad, we want trainers. Dad, we want to do this. We want to really work. And I'm like, let's go.
Yeah. No,
I thought that moment when the Warriors brought you guys all out.
Yeah.
When you got your ring.
Yeah.
But you brought your twins.
I got
out.
Them rings too.
Dude, that
does.
Yeah, come on, man.
That goes far in establishing a love for the game. I don't know if you saw that, Dad, but when the night Matt got
so
his
I retired.
Break it down.
Yeah, so I retired the following season after winning a championship because at the time I wasn't getting a chance to see my kids. So I went back and got full custody of my kids, and they were with me all the time, which is a blessing. But I retired, and I wanted to get the Twins a ring. You know, they were around that team on the plains. They're, you know, having shootouts with Steph and KD in the Western Conference Finals. They're in our morning breakfast film sessions with Coach Kerr and all kind. Like, so they were there. Right. You couldn't tell them they weren't Warriors. So I got them a ring, and I think they were 8 at the time.
Yep.
And amazing. It was just, you know, they still have it to this day, and it was expensive for both of them. But just again, like, those are kind of the experience that you know, they're irreplaceable. You can't put a number, a price tag on that kind of stuff. And again, you know, to your point, Chris, they can always shoot, and they had a basketball IQ, but they didn't find the passion or really the love for the game until maybe 2 years ago, I'd say.
Facts.
And it's so interesting to me that, and we can take this any way you want to go with it, but Derek Fisher is their head coach right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you and Derek have had, you know.
Yeah, we had our tussle.
You had a little
tussle. Me and D, Marks, what people don't, me and D Fisher are cool, man. What people don't know, or I've told this enough now that some people pay attention and know, that happened at the beginning of the 2016 season. By the end of that season, when I came back to LA, we had squashed it.
Yeah.
Because first and foremost, the Twins, you know, I asked, you know, how do you feel? How's this? How are things? And they loved Derek.
Yeah.
And that's all because the ship had sailed between their mom and I. It was a nasty divorce. You know, I divorced her and things got ugly. He and I had our situations. But once I knew it was real and the boys loved him and he loved the boys back, we had a conversation because I was still playing. I'm just like, you know, you have to be the man. And I wasn't seeing them as much because I'm obviously I'm playing, but you know, you got to be the man. You got to discipline them. You got to show them, you know, morals and you know, principles and all this kind of stuff. So me and D have been fine. Like, are we best friends? I wouldn't say that, but we know every time we see each other, you know, we greet each other, we talk, and he is the coach of the boys now.
So when you got something to say, or when you got, you know, a gripe on the court or something like that, how do you go
yell
about
it.
How
I
do
just
you
yell it?
You hope he hears
I
it.
I yell it. He hears it. I yell it.
In.
Yeah, no, I've had to yell at some sometimes. I mean, you got two snipers on the bench right now. You need some shooting. Like, God, come on now. So, and again, I never try to be in a disrespectful. You know, and that those competitive juices get flowing as a father, it's different.
Oh man, please,
it's different.
Hey,
so, you know, I try to be respectful. And again, we, you know, definitely speak and we talk strategy at times, and you know, we talk, you know, personnel at times. So,
I'm laughing because my best friend, my golf buddy, Coach Josiah at Montclair Prep, and we didn't speak for a while after that season because he had Josiah playing the high post. He was passing to JJ Prince, the coach out of
Viewpoint.
And he's passing
that was his teammate
passer. My best friend at Crenshaw coached my son Josh, Ed Waters. He's coaching there now. He coached Josh, and my mom came to a game and he didn't put Josh in because you know, for whatever.
No, it gets real out there.
So if there's nothing that can break up a relationship, even if you know, the closest of relationships,
let alone
coaching.
When someone's coaching your kids.
And there's already a bad. I'm not going to lie. There was times where I was pissed.
I'm
not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There was a situation at Notre Dame, you know, with Mercy Miller, and we're a young team picked to finish last. And we were up, I think, 10 or 12 going into halftime, and they came out and went on like a 16-0 run, then an 18-2 run before he called timeout.
Jeez,
and I just thought he was kind of out there on his kind of his Phil Jackson, but I was thinking, like, we don't got Kobe out there.
On his Phil Jackson.
Yeah, we, you know, you don't feel like to let you struggle through and figure things out. You know what I mean? And I've even taken some of Phil with me, so that was the only thing I can guess. I'm like, I guess Fish is on his Phil Jackson. These boys are going to figure it out, but they're not figuring it out. We need a timeout. You know what I mean? So, but it's great. I mean, the way you look at it, obviously, considering our past and what we've been through and where we're at now, but at the end of the day, that's a 5-time NBA champ, you know. So if you have someone like that can give your kids knowledge and is their stepdad, like, I'd be an idiot to fight against that or try to build a wall against that. I mean, to me, it's our job to raise productive young men together.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
Matt, you've evolved, obviously, matured as we've gotten older. Same here with me.
Yeah.
When we were younger, I just want to know, like, what are some of the things that you've implemented in your life that allowed you to handle situations differently, to where, you know, you might have handled things a certain way years ago, and now today, Matt Barnes handles things differently. What is it?
I think I've handled things the wrong way enough to know how to handle them the right way at this point. And, you know, being able to just look in the mirror and see your soul. You know what I mean? And I think I did a lot of reflecting when I retired on just like, man, I was in TMZ. I was on ESPN. There was just a lot of stuff that came with Matt Barnes. So how And at the, there would be times where, damn, that's not my fault. But when you get to the point where you can look back and kind of find your fault in the reasons why your life is so hectic and crazy,
yeah.
first and foremost, forgive yourself and be able to move on. I think that's when I really started to grow. But, yeah. but that wasn't, man, until I was 37. But
that's
I feel like it's, you know, it's never, and I think, Kristen, you know me for a long time. Like, I'm not necessarily a hothead. I just don't do disrespect. When I get disrespected, like, all things are out the window. I don't care that I'm an athlete. I don't care that I'm a father. I don't care. And that's what I've really been trying to hardest in. But if it's just day to day in the lot, like, people who know me, to know me is to love me. And that's not to talk crazy, but like, I'm funny. I talk a lot of trash. I'm good. I'm going to take care. I'll give you the shirt off my back. I'll do anything for you. But I just never dealt with, you know, disrespect the right way. But just as, you know, we know as the older we get, there's more things on the line now and there's more eyeballs now more than ever. And I still slip up. You know, I had to slip up at the Harvard-Westlake game where these people were being very disrespectful
to
me.
The moms was on you.
The mom was F you and flipped me off.
The moms was on you.
And someone told me to sit my ass down and I'm just like, who are you people talking to? But obviously you see me going over there talking to the person that told me to sit my ass down and they're, why are you doing this? And oh, you're acting like, and I'm just like, no, I just don't, I wasn't talking to y'all. You don't have to disrespect me. Don't tell me to F you and go home and do all this kind of stuff. And I don't play none of that. You know what I mean? So it's just like, you know, again, you try to, you know, shake the stigma, but it, at the end of the day, like, I'm always going to have a little bit of fire in me. And as long as, you know, because I give everyone love and everyone respect. And when I don't get it back, I have a problem with that.
Well, it's nothing like a competitive basketball environment.
Right.
Please.
My daughter Shiloh, I think one team, they were yelling out overrated because they were, you know, double, triple teaming her and she wasn't doing a whole lot. And I wasn't there. But
lucky you weren't.
But in my mind, I had my response.
Come on, man.
What I would have said.
No question.
What I would have done.
Yeah.
And
especially when it's your babies.
Oh, my God.
Come on, man. You'll do anything for your babies.
Mental Health Awareness Month is the month of May. And I'm not trying to be funny when I say this.
We all need it. Mm-hmm.
I was working a game, Bucks against Memphis.
When I was about to whoop John Henson's ass.
You and John.
And I think you said it too. Barnes going to the line. It's funny you brought that up, man. I haven't thought about that. It's so.
The play, Barnes down the lane. And rejected by Henson. And Barnes doesn't like that. Take that. And I'll meet you in the locker room after the game.
Hey, Marcus, I was pissed. I was,
why?
So, I actually had a good game that game, too.
Yes.
But I think Henson didn't play the whole entire game, and he came right in and hard fouled someone and started talking trash. I'm like, bro, you guys are up, and you haven't even played. Like, chill out. Let's just let this buzzer go off. And then, so he hard fouled the teammate, and I was like, yo, chill out, bro. He's like, well, you don't want this. Something weird. I let the first one go, Marcus. Let the first one go. Next time I'm coming down, and I kind of fumble it, and then I go up, because that's all I can do. And he blocks it and he starts doing this scowl and stare. I was like, all right, you're going to keep playing with me. It's going to be a real problem. He's like, oh, you want some? He said something to the fact that you want some.
Federal agents. Man, because I'm flagrant. Come on, Matt Barnes. And look at Danny Longley. Listen to the crowd on Jimmy John night. This is the Jimmy John night to remember.
That's right. Look at him. He takes his jersey off, flips it to a crowd. And now he'll go back and put some Vaseline on, tape up his hands, and get ready.
And at that point, we were getting blown out. We were in Milwaukee. I was ready to go, so I wasn't having it.
It all started with the flagrant on John Henson. How about Jason Kidd? Just watching.
Yeah.
He's finding some things out while watching this.
Well,
I don't think he minds it one bit.
So he gets a double tee and gets kicked out, but I had a tee from earlier in the game, and they gave me a tee just for, I don't even know what I did. I think it was Zach Zarba. I'm like, what did I get a tee for? And they're like, we just want this game to end. So I got kicked out the game. So I'm like, all right, so we're going to see how tough you are. So he gets out first, so I take off. And
this is a Memphis situation. Where
now Barnes heads into the locker room. He'll go looking for him. The whole security is back there. And he is heading straight to the
Greg Foster,
Milwaukee Bucks
Greg
locker room.
In hot pursuit. So there's usually security right in front of the Bucks locker room.
Yeah,
because Matt Barnes will go into the Bucks locker room.
I know the backside of your guys' locker room. You can come out the backside just like we can. So I go in there and chase him into the locker room. He doesn't. I don't know if he knows I'm coming initially, but I think someone might have told him. So I get to the locker room and Greaves Vasquez wasn't playing that day,
right.
And I had just barged in the locker room. Little did I know there was cops and coaches behind me, but I was going to find him. And Greaves was like, "Nah, he just went out the back." Like, you know. So he snuck back out. And then so I was pissed. So I got back to my locker room, showered, didn't care what the coach had to say, showered up real quick and went and stood up by the bus. And I stood out by the bus for like an hour, and dudes were coming out like, yo, he's not coming out. He's standing right here until like the Memphis secure, or excuse me, the Milwaukee police that kind of troll the area and get the buses off. Yeah. Like, Mr. Barnes, you got to go. Like, I made the bus wait. Now, like, I wanted to see what he was talking about.
Right.
That's where I was at. And it was, that's funny.
But how long did you hold on to that? For years?
No,
a month,
hell no.
Or did you just let go of it?
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was it. Okay. Yeah, I don't really, you know, I mean, I don't hold, like, I think life is too short to like hate people or be mad. Like, I'm blessed. I was blessed. You just pushed the wrong button that night. So we were going to see, you know, but I'm glad it didn't happen, obviously. And, you know, wish him the best now. But that night, he could have got it.
So we had Dr. Craig Manning, who was responsible for like getting the Bucks in a real proper kind of positive mindset to deal with a lot of different stuff. Did they have that kind of support when you were playing?
They should have.
Yeah.
No, I think, you know, I mean, I got some support when my mom died. But you got to think, like, mental health wasn't, Marcus, it wasn't talked about until the end of my career. You know, when players started coming out and say, hey, I need help. You know, as black men in our community, any sign of weakness is a sign of weak. We don't do it. We don't cry. We don't complain. We don't point, you know what I mean? We just have to take it on the chin. And that's the way I grew up. You know, I grew up, if, you know, my brothers and sisters fight, you fight. And if you don't fight, I'm going to get my ass whooped when I get home. Right. So I just grew up with, you know, protecting family at all cost, and you never show signs of weakness. So I love it. We're to the point now that we can say, hey, no matter what we've done in our past or the money we've made, we're like, we need help. We need, and I'm in counseling too, you know, now to this day, is unpacking my childhood trauma. You know, I grew up in with two, you know, functional drug addicts, where I saw people doing drugs in front of me, violence, you know, abuse, a lot of different things going on in my childhood that, although it made me tougher and kind of made me who it is, like, it shaped some of my bonehead ways to this day, you know, so to be able to unpack that trauma and have someone you can, you know, safely talk to and give you tools to manage things moving forward. I think, I mean, who doesn't need that, especially in the black community?
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
And while we're talking about the Bucks, let's finish up with this, man. Just your impressions of kind of where this Dame Lillard,
the trade,
this going to work
situation.
Out. How can it work out?
Giannis, what's tough. Happening?
It's tough. I mean, I think, you know, obviously you think Dan, I'm a big fan of Dame. Dame's my homie. You think you bring a Dame into the situation that's the missing piece, but you also subtract a Holiday.
Yeah.
Who was very instrumental, led by example, consummate pro that played all defense, but can also give you 30 if Middleton and or Giannis isn't going. So you lose that side. Dame has a struggle period. Everyone's out with injuries. Obviously, Giannis's calf, I think it was calf, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the season, you don't want to risk that because KD tried to risk that and tore his Achilles with the Golden State Warriors. So obviously, I love that Milwaukee played that safe. You add Doc in the mix, and Doc comes with attention and some baggage himself, you know what I mean? So I just think there was a lot of moving parts to be able to fix that and make that team go. You know, obviously I'm hoping Giannis is going to be healthy next year and really get a full season with him and Dame. My question is, what's Chris Middleton giving me? He has been very instrumental in years past, being able to be a defender, but also that second score, the word is he had, and then being able to build around that team. You know, I love Bobby Portis and some of the other pieces of Brooke Lopez. I mean, the ageless wonder. I remember when Brooke and Robin, I played AU with their big brother, quick story, and they used to be under the bleachers, like stealing purses and doing all kinds of stuff when they were
with
little.
Christopher, you played with?
So, I mean, to see what he's been able to do, and again, I don't really know what happened with the coach. You know, I wonder what happened with Adrian Griffin. You guys don't have to tell me anything, but it's like, it just seems like there's a lot of stuff going on. And Marks, you know, you won a championship. Chris, you won. Everyone has to be on the same page.
Yeah.
And when it's not, and there's a lot of moving parts, it's hard to silence the noise when it's most important. And obviously, it's hard to win when you don't have your stars as well.
Well, and that was the thing with Adrian Griffin. I mean, just from my perspective, I mean, it was like the players started to lose confidence for whatever reason. I mean, you just felt it permeate through the locker room and some of the things they would say, some of the things they would do. And, you know, you hate to see it happen to especially African-American coaches first time around, 30-13 record or whatever it was.
That was crazy.
When he lost a job. But you know, a lot of us felt that had been watching that
Something had to change.
Something had
really,
to change.
It was that bad that fast, huh? Not bad. I wouldn't want to say the word bad, but it was that obvious that fast?
It was that obvious. It was that obvious. I mean, you could just see just some, you know.
You've been in the league.
Yeah.
You know time. You know what time it is.
Yeah, no, there's
you
no
know
question.
What time it is.
No question.
You know, I used to always say with the Clippers, you know, we were experts when I was playing with the Clippers. We were experts at getting coaches fired. there's a way you do it. You don't run back on defense transition. You don't box. You know, there's little things.
Little details you're not paying attention to.
Little slippage that caused you to lose games. That can go unnoticed by the naked eyes.
And you're not saying that that's what happened, but things.
There are ways.
Well, but you look at the transition defense. So our transition defense was 30th in the league.
Oof.
You know what I mean. So,
and there was only 28 teams.
Dead last in transition defense. Little things like that. But again, we wish. Nothing but the best for
Yeah.
Griffin. Hopefully, he gets another opportunity. And so
Marcus, to your point, you know. Although there's a lot more black coaches now, and I love it, that hurts all of us.
It hurts.
All the coaches.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, I think we're almost out of this period because I want to say half the league has black coaches now. But for a while, there were some coaching jobs that black coaches couldn't take because if you lost, you would be a second seat or third, second seat at best or third seat for the rest of the time. You know, there's only so many losing seasons black coaches in the NBA can have. You see a lot of, and keep it real, you get mad if you want, you see a lot of recycled white coaches.
Yeah.
You see a lot of recycled white coaches. There's only a handful of black coaches that get recycled. And Doc is the one that comes to mind right now. But outside of that, like, you don't get too many chances to fail as a black coach in the NBA.
Well, and even fail is you know.
It's a relative word.
It's a relative. Right. Bickerstaff.
That's what I was going to say. Like,
come on, man.
Like, golly.
You win 99 games in two seasons, and then you have injuries. And
major
injuries.
You know
what I mean? It's just like, that was crazy to me. But, yeah.
Yeah. So, but look, man. We appreciate you so much for coming through. One last thing,
mm-hmm.
really a couple of last things, but
yeah,
just
yeah.
to get your opinion. First, the Pac-10 and the Big Ten,
yeah,
Pac-12,
what is going
Big
on?
Ten. I mean, your feelings about UCLA going back to the Big Ten.
I don't necessarily like it. Wait, back to it? They were already there before?
No.
Oh, okay.
Going back to that area, that geographical area now.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, for football. But we've never necessarily, and I say it's all due respect, been a football school. But we haven't necessarily been a basketball school for a while, either, Chris. You know, as we kind of tighten up over here, we haven't necessarily been.
We got the Final Four a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so, but it financially, and that's unfortunately what everything is about these days. Is, you know, I think they're going to, I don't even know how much, but almost $100 million for this transition to it. And, you know, that's somewhere my kids want to go. You know what I mean? So I'm thinking, hey, if they're fortunate enough to go to UCLA, I'm going to get to catch all their games because I'm not going nowhere. And, now they're moving to the Big Ten. So obviously I think it's a strategic move predominantly for football. But football is what carries most college programs to begin with. And there's a ton of money there. So I don't like it one bit, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it's the money play, man, and especially in today's day and age and with the NIL and collectives and all that. I don't think the regional aspect of everything kind of hits the same.
Mm-hmm.
But something I wanted to get your vantage on, bro, because I watch your stuff, and I know you've been outspoken about Caitlin Clark, the WNBA, and sort of what's happening. Do you feel like, you know, the popularity of Caitlin Clark, is this good for basketball?
I think it's great. And I think, you know, sometimes you got to be careful what you ask for, because when you have a lot of eyes and attention, a lot of BS comes with it. You know, we face it as NBA or male basketball players all the time. You know, a lot of people have voices. Some of them don't deserve to have it. So there's going to be a lot of just negativity. And I like that Bron spoke out. You know, I didn't hear everything he said, but I know he's faced it for a long time. I mean, there's more people that love LeBron, but you're always going to hear the people that hate him louder than the people that love him. And I think Caitlin Clark is, you know, I feel like her and Angel Reese right now. And I saw Angel Reese, you know, the other night, you know, get some girl like clotheslined her and got ejected. And she's like, I'm going to keep coming.
That's her
prayer.
Yeah.
That's how she's going to pray. I feel like they're getting jumped in the gang right now. We're in LA, so you kind of get that. We want to see how tough you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're not going to give you, and I've seen people, you got to let her do this. These women are competitors.
Yeah.
And the last thing they want to do is come get embarrassed by someone who's getting a bunch of accolades before they've accomplished anything on their level.
For sure.
But overall, I think Caitlin Clark is great for the game. I think Angel Reese is great for the game. They've brought a level of popularity and just, we want to know now. And every sports talk show podcast is talking about them. So that's obviously eyes. You know, there's a huge thing about why does she have her own shoe? Because she's marketable.
Yeah.
I mean, she sold the Staples Center out. 19,000 plus the other night.
That's tough.
You know what I mean? And they're cheering for her. She's an away player, by the way. You know what I mean? And, and Brinks from that, what's her, Cameron Brinks? Is that her name?
Yeah.
That plays for,
from the
I just think this is a special rookie class.
It's like the 84 NBA class is what they're saying.
Man, it's a special class that is going to change the game. And it's, we're not saying that Caitlin or Angel or any of these girls are better than Asia or better than Stewie or any of these girl other girls that are at the top of the game.
Yeah.
But they're bringing a different level of business. They were business. They were bigger entities, bigger businesses than the WNBA was before they got there. If we're being honest,
facts.
These girls are taking pay cuts to come to come play pros, but they have a built-in ecosystem that already loves them or hates them. But it's still an ecosystem. You know what I mean? So that is going to bring. And that was my thing. It wasn't about their games translate. Their games are going to translate. Yeah, they may not be putting up crazy numbers right now, but what rookies do? They're six games into the season. You know what I mean? I think, if I'm not mistaken, Reese is the number one offensive rebounder, you know.
She's getting in
the game. You know what I mean? So these girls' games are going to flourish because they can play. But I think people have an issue with, one, I think there's a little bit of racism in it. I'm not going to lie, both ways. Because I remember when Angel Reese was getting the hate in college. You know what I mean? Caitlin Clark is getting her hate now. But at the end of the day, I think the media builds all this up. Neither of these girls came and asked to be saviors of the league. They're just, you know, this is the next step in their journey. And I wish them all well. And I wish people would just allow the process to happen. But like I said, when you start getting this attention, fellas, you can't pick and choose how you want the attention. You have the attention now. I don't know numbers, but I'm sure the numbers are out the roof. You know, they're selling out. There are more national TV games. People are talking about it, whether it's positively or negatively. It's on The View now. Like, people are talking about it, and that's what you want, you know, because if they're talking, that means it's growing. That means, you know, Caitlin Clark sold more jerseys than the Dallas Cowboys in a whole season.
Wow.
Opening day.
That's,
you know what
wild.
I mean? So it's just like, these girls are talented. They obviously have a way to go as far as earning that respect. But I look at it too, like, Love and Basketball. Remember how they did Sanaa Lathan and SC the whole time where they beat her up until she kind of finally showed, I'm one of you.
Yes.
And I'm going to help you win this. And I think that's the kind of stuff that these girls have to go. But what rookie doesn't? Mm. You know, it's always happened. I mean, that also what makes Candace Parker's rookie year so special, where she won Rookie of the Year and MVP to come into a league of grown women.
Were they going at your head every day?
Come on, man. Shout out Candace. She just had, retired her amazing career. But these girls are going through the initiation process, and it is what it is. I just think there's more eyeballs on the female side of it now, so people don't know how to handle it. So you hear a bunch of wild opinions. But I think at the end of the day, all these girls are very talented, and you got a lot more talent coming down the pipeline. We got Juju at SC, and I just love it, man. And
Paige, and
yeah, right. And when we just have to, and we talk about mental health now more than ever, you have to protect your mental health, because you used to just have to hear it on ESPN or the paper. Now you hear it daily. And you heard Caitlin, I think, in an interview talk about, you know, I protect myself by kind of just staying off the internet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So sometimes you have to be able to do that, because this is a cold world of jealous, envious, don't have anything good for you. So let me portray that negative energy on you type of social media environment. So there are times where you have to protect yourself. But I think at the end of the day, we hear the hate louder, but when you see these arenas going crazy for these women and the sky selling out arenas, it's just like, these girls are great for the game, and everyone in that league is going to benefit in the long run.
Absolutely.
Listen, man. Social media, you mentioned that, and I'm going to end on this really, but see, I gotta guard myself. I can't use you as my prototype in terms of how you deal with haters on social media.
Oh yeah, I'm a little different.
because
Matt don't play.
I've calmed down.
You'll look at your page or whatever.
Oh yeah. I clown people, so I don't do it as much anymore. They end up coming apologize. You're right, bro. My bad.
Yeah.
Like, they end up, because it's a hard position to be in. I mean, because we're targets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you always see, ignore it, turn the other cheek. But yeah, sometimes you don't want to. Like, I don't want you talking to me today.
Yeah.
Don't talk about my kid. You know what I mean? So it's just such an amazing place at the same time, but also just it's a terrible place, because for everything I mentioned, there's just some people out there that things aren't going too well, so they want to project that negativity or
hide
hate
behind the keyboard,
or insecurities that they have out on you, when we're out here living our dreams and enjoying them. So, you know, that's one thing that, you know, we talk about my kids. I prepare them now. You know, there's people that are going to hate you guys because of me. There's people going to hate you because of your podcast, because of the family show you're on, because they don't, you know, there's a lot of different, but you know, we got to build these kids today more mentally strong, because there's just so many more distractions.
Absolutely.
Well, look, man, it's been great, man. We so appreciate you coming through. And the fact that you're living your dream.
Yes, man. Amen.
All the smoke, doing what you're doing with that. The Barnes Bunch. You got the reality show jumping off. And it's just been a real source of pride for me to watch kind of how you've blown up. And you're changing the game. You guys are doing a great
100%.
Job changing the game in terms of how you're approaching the business. And, man, we appreciate you so much, Matt.
No, thank you. That one thing I would want to mention, I mean, obviously I'm building my business, so I want to mention, I mean, we've got All the Smoke Productions now. And we went from a show to a platform where we have, you know, Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett and Rachel Nichols and Rajon Rondo and DeMarcus Cousins and Isaiah Thomas, and we're venturing out into the NFL and MMA, boxing, golf. Yes. So, you know, we've been able to turn in, and as you say, I feel like there's a huge shift in sports media right now. And if you're able to articulate it and know what you're doing, you're going to have an opportunity to be heard. So you don't need the machines anymore. So it's a fun time right now, and it's a blessing to be a part of it.
Appreciate you, bud. Thank you.
No doubt, guys.
Matt Barnes.
Bye.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production. Oh.